Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 64. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com. My co-host David Todd had some last-minute things that came up for him, so he's taking Wednesday off. So you know what that means. I'm joined by SteelersDepot.com site contributor and really my partner in crime, so to speak, Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Wednesday, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, And happy Festivus, more important.
Yeah, that's the big one, Dave, is Festivus. My whole timeline on Facebook was nothing but Festivus. Whenever you said if I could come on the podcast, I thought you Steve Harvey me for a second there and asked the wrong person or something. But is it me? Did I win? Am I Miss Universe?
No, you will always be my Miss Universe, Alex.
You're going to make me cry already.
Boy, what a mess that was, wasn't it?
Unbelievable. Okay, do you think that they faked it and did intentionally screw it up for the attention? Or do you think he actually just made a mistake?
I think he made a mistake. I think if you even go back and watch that video, his hand's shaking a little bit. He's like he made a major snafu. My wife even said he's so overrated. but we'll leave that for somebody else's podcast for sure. But what a mess that was. Alex, big win over the Denver Broncos, and you know if you're like me, and I know you've watched the tape three or four times already. Really was like watching two separate games, and really, in my case, it felt like four games, really, in one. But obviously, talking about the way the defense played in the first half versus the way the defense in the second half, the immediate narrative that we saw on Twitter and I think online in some articles was that the Steelers made all these halftime adjustments, and that's what led to the shutout in the second half. I thought initially, just first time back through the tape, that was not the case. There were some minor differences, obviously personnel differences with Antoine Blake only playing four or five snaps in the second half. Mike Tomlin said after the game that there weren't any major schematic changes, so to speak. What did Alex Kozora see in the second half of that game defensively?
I'm right there with you, Dave. I didn't see anything overwhelmingly different. I mean, maybe you could point to a couple different things, you know, minor. I know people love to look at, you know, Antoine Blake not being there, but Antoine Blake didn't give up 27 points alone in that first half, so you can't put it all on him for that kind of turnaround. I think Denver just hurt themselves. They put themselves in some second and third and long, which obviously is going to help the Steelers. There were some miscues on that part. I thought they kind of got away from their game plan in the first half. In the first half, they were going empty, spreading the Steelers out, and just picking them apart. The second half, they were a little bit more condensed and a little bit more two tight end sets and trying to run the ball more, and they just seemed to get away from what they did well in the first half. You listen to some of the Steelers talk, it's about communication and energy level. You can just tell in that first half, I mean, it felt like a first preseason game, Dave, where this team just could not get on the same page for whatever reason. Very strange in week 15 at home for there to be that many communication breakdowns, but I don't think there were any wholesale changes.
I think you hit on a good point there with what they did offensively, and I know the defensive charting, you've already knocked that out. It'd be interesting. It almost did seem like we didn't see as many. It's like they sat on the lead, right?
Yeah, they got really conservative, and they went into their shell because they were going empty. It was still 11 personnel, one running back, one tight end, but they would spread everybody out, and they would just look for those individual matchups, spread the field. You can't blitz as much because you're forced to declare, Denver hurt themselves as much as Pittsburgh, you know, helped themselves.
And there were drop passes in that second half. Vernon Davis had one. that I remember. Demaryius Thomas had, I think, one or two. Seemed like there might have been another one that bounced off of a receiver's hands that should have been caught as well. And then how much do you think the shoulder, whatever it was, that Brock Osweiler suffered in the first, you know, later on in the first half, how much do you think that played in?
That might have played a part. I'm sure they won't use it as an excuse. Maybe that was the reason why they went more conservative and tried to run the ball more, because they thought they could have a lead and kind of take the pressure off Osweiler, and obviously it backfired.
All right, we'll fast forward a little bit now into comments, and there weren't many of them made by Mike Tomlin on Tuesday during his press conference. First and foremost, one of the main topics. Well, let's go over the injuries first, and really the only main injury that to come out of that Denver Broncos game was Mike Mitchell with the shoulder injury. And really, when he went down, I had a post all ready to go up that thinking that he was going to be out, you know, maybe for the rest of the game or for an extended amount of time. But he really didn't miss but a handful of plays. I don't think he came back, and of course he finished. Mike Tomlin really only named Mike Mitchell as the only guy that could be possibly limited this week. He did, however, give us a heads up that we could see some maintenance days in here, some veterans days off early in the week. He also kind of hinted that there might be a flu bug going around the locker room right now, so it wouldn't be a surprise if on Wednesday afternoon later today we see some illnesses show up on the injury report as well. So overall, a healthy Steelers team going into week 16 game against the Baltimore Ravens. And fast forward on to some other comments, you know, after he got through trying to make the Baltimore Ravens look like the Super Bowl champions, as he does with every team every week. He was asked point blank due to the way Boykin played and the defense played in the second half, if indeed Boykin would be the starter this week, and he gave the answer that I knew he was going to give. You knew he was going to give. Why some of the media didn't see it coming, I don't know. But basically said he's going to keep the same cornerback rotation that he has been using, and that means we're going to see Antoine Blake probably start in both base and nickel for two or three series, and then Brandon Boykin come in, and you know, we could see, depending on how close the game is against Baltimore in the second half, we could see Antoine Blake play just four or five snaps in the second half. I know which way you're probably going to handle this, but I want to hear you say it anyway. Does Blake really even deserve to be out there at this point?
Yeah, no, and you won't find many Steeler fans that say otherwise. I mean, Antoine Blake is just the hot topic. You write his name, and boom, the comment section, 200 people just going at it. I'm having just a hard time, like everybody else, but just having a hard time grasping the rotation. Because remember, in that Broncos game, it was Ross Cockrell who came out for Boykin in the first half, and then Blake came out for Boykin in the second half, and Cockrell stayed on the field. Now Blake played only in base packages. I'm not sure why Cockrell came out first. I don't know if that was planned or just based on lack of communication. He was making the most errors, and they decided to pull him and then put him back in the second half. I don't really have a good explanation for that. Blake doesn't start as a gunner, didn't start on kick coverage. He came in the second half but didn't start. Fitzgerald Toussaint started over him, so the idea that they want to give Blake more time on special teams to be fresh and play there and play well there, but then not start him and limit his snaps, it's all very strange. It's been very strange all year long, and I don't have any great explanations.
And he's going to stick with that too, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, at least the final two regular season games. Do you have – is there any chance whatsoever, assuming this team gets into the playoffs, that – we see them go with Cockrell, Boykin, and Gay?
It's a nice thought, but I mean, this is basically the playoffs now. I mean, every game counts, and Tomlin isn't
True.
Making the change, so I'm not sure why he would change for an actual playoff game. So no, I don't anticipate it changing.
Did you see the stats that I posted up on the cornerbacks?
I did. I'm always kind of just careful with stats like that, but I understand there was a big difference. But the quarterback rating with Blake and Nickel was like 93, and the stats were all great. And then it was a big difference, as you might expect. But I am always a little wary of just raw numbers like that.
Right, because so much goes into it, score of the game, down in distance, who else was on the field. Those were just raw passing stats versus different groupings, but there was quite a difference on working, and as I explained in that post too, and if our listeners haven't read it yet, it's basically the raw passing stats against the Steelers nickel sub package when each grouping of three different cornerbacks are on the field. And I'm working on what's called the successful completions, and I know that that's kind of a successful and unsuccessful completions, and I know that's kind of a strange term because you would think, okay, a completed pass is successful. Well, not really always, and I kind of explained that before. I'm going back through the numbers. Really, an unsuccessful completed pass would be one that doesn't gain a certain percentage of yards on each down, regardless or depending on what the down and distance is. And I know what the results are going to say. I mean, it's pretty obvious, but those will be numbers that I hope to have up maybe later in the week as far as those groupings go. I thought though, Boykin, he hasn't played a lot really just ever since the game against the Colts, but against the run, I've been impressed with the way he's come up and attacked the run.
Yeah, I think that. I think him as a tackler in the open field, I think he's gotten positive marks in both areas. Against Denver, playing the slot sometimes, you kind of get mixed in into the run game on some of those stretch, outside zone runs. I thought he did well. I know at one point, during the year, whenever he wasn't playing, there was a narrative that he wasn't a good tackler and wouldn't stick his nose in against the run. I've seen nothing to confirm that. So, I think he's done just fine in that area.
And, people still want to make this an Antoine Blake versus Brandon Boykin thing, but, it's really an Antoine Blake versus Ross Cockrell thing.
Yeah. In which way do you go by that?
Well, I'm talking in sub-package.
Yeah, yeah. Because obviously Boykin and Blake do play different positions. Blake's going to play on the outside. Boykin's going to play in the slot. Though, of course, the counter to that would be just move Gay outside and have Cockrell on the outside as well, and then Gay and then Boykin in the slot. But it's been tough. Again, I don't know why Blake's out there. I mean, if it was me, he'd probably be on injured reserve right now, just kind of knowing where he's at. I still like Antoine Blake. I want him back next year. I'm probably in a pretty big minority on that. But I think whenever he gets healthy, I think there's a lot of good things he does for this team. I think just the competitiveness that he has and the mental toughness alone is attractive. And then his physicality on the field and even ability to play the pocket whenever he's able to get eyes on the ball. I think he's shown some good things there. So I'm just waiting till next year for Antoine Blake.
I wouldn't say that I necessarily want him back, but I do know the situation with the amount of corners under contract, how many, obviously Ross Cockrell will be back as an exclusive rights free agent. You have Cinquez Golson, you have Dorian Grant. We all expect William Gay to be re-signed at some point during the offseason. Leaving my wants out of it, I think Blake's back as well too, at least at training camp on a one. I mean, let's face it, nobody's going to sign Antoine Blake as an unrestricted free agent to a long term deal. So what that means is you can sign Antoine Blake to a 1 year veteran minimum deal, and go from there with him. Invite him to training camp and see what the competition is. Because look, you'll probably have to make some decisions with him. You won't have to do it probably prior to the draft because he's not going to be a priority guy out there. You just let him float, hang around out there, see if he gets any offers, which I can't imagine him getting anything over the minimum anyway. And just really the Steelers kind of having the unofficial right of first refusal on him. But don't go throwing your Antoine Blake jerseys away just yet, because I think there is a good chance that he's at least back in training camp competing with whoever else is on the roster next year. But
real quick, I don't want to get too much down this rabbit hole, but I had a commenter in one of the articles I did yesterday bring this to my attention. You see what Ed Bouchette said about Cinquez Golson the other day?
No, I did not.
Apparently, Golson hasn't even been around the facility all season long, is what he was told, and hasn't even gotten any of those mental reps, hasn't been in meetings. I guess the explanation is because of the rehab from the injury. But I'll send you the link later. But apparently, Golson has not been around much. So you're thinking about a guy coming in 2016 that is basically just brand new rookie, just starting from scratch.
Yeah, you would think that he would have the team's blessing on that.
I imagine, but it's still peculiar to me, because what's the real benefit? Wouldn't you want this guy in meetings and just around practice and just to get that feel of how the way, you know, things work?
It's discouraging news only if that's his decision to do so.
Yeah, I'm sure it's team based, but I don't understand. I'm sure maybe there's something I'm missing, but I just don't totally understand it. Because wouldn't you want this guy to have the mental reps so he can jump in and know how things work and what the expectation level is and those kinds of things? So it really feels like you'll be starting with a brand new, just drafted rookie, because a guy that never has had an NFL rep in a training camp, in a preseason game, in anything, that does not have a lot of time around the facility and in that building. Who knows what we'll get from Golson, but it even becomes more of a question mark knowing that he's not really involved a lot.
That sounds like a David Todd question for Mike Tomlin immediately after the season ends, which we hope doesn't happen for several more weeks. But or even something for Kevin Colbert,
yeah.
You know, come combine time there. What else stuck out during? I mean, as I said, Tomlin really didn't say a whole lot during the press conference. He had some. He kind of threw a dart at the direction of Shamarco Thomas.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go with it. He just seemed in a bad mood yesterday, and maybe it was Shamarco Thomas that caused it. The gaffe on special teams, which we all know, was the near touchdown by Denver by Jordan Norwood when he came in, you know, picked up the ball end of the third quarter. Had it stood, it was nullified by the Broncos offense, even thinking that the play was dead and coming out onto the field. But that would have made it 34-20 at the end of the third quarter. And I know Shark's toe was probably out of bounds, and hopefully they would have reviewed it had there not been the penalty, and it would have been reversed. But with these refs, you just never know. You never like to risk it. Tomlin was asked, you know, did you talk to Shamarco after the play? And Tomlin was very blunt and said, no, I didn't think I needed to have a conversation. It's like telling someone that the sky is blue, which is pretty harsh criticism. But I mean, it's just another thing with Shamarco Thomas of just a mental mistake, a mental blunder. Pick up the football, don't stop on the play, don't assume there's going to be a whistle. That's, you know, day one, you know, training camp stuff. If we're going to play to the whistle, we're going to play smart. We're not going to get lazy on special teams. And, you know, if people, everyone needed more answers of why Shamarco Thomas could not get a hat on defense, that's a great example of why.
Take nothing for granted, especially when officiating comes into play in there. Defensively, the rest of the team. Well, before we move forward, what else from Tomlin caught your eye?
I think that was the majority. It wasn't a very exciting press conference. There's a couple Ravens things I'm excited to talk about. John Eisenberg, we're going to have him here in a little bit. You know, Tomlin mentioned possibility to Ryan Mallett. It seems like there's a chance he could start this Sunday, so I'm interested to get John's thoughts on that because I don't know much about the situation there. Other thing we could talk about real quick is just Pro Bowl. I don't get too caught up in it, but you got your three guys, DeCastro, Antonio Brown, and Ben Roethlisberger. Any Festivus grievances there, Dave?
I think you can make an argument that DeCastro didn't belong.
Yeah, I don't, Gilbert should be in there if anything.
Yeah, I think Gilbert belongs over DeCastro. Now, where I wrote all off season that this was the year that you really would expect DeCastro to make the Pro Bowl, but did he deserve it?
I think it's harder for Gilbert just because it's all about name value with the offensive line. People don't look at these things too much, the common fans, so they just pick the name value. It's going to be a lot tougher for Marcus Gilbert to, you know, competing with Joe Thomas's and guys like that at offensive tackle than it is for David DeCastro, which carries some more name value. So that's the way it kind of goes for offensive line. I thought DeCastro's had a nice year. I don't know if I quite call it Pro Bowl caliber. It was borderline. In a fair and just world, you know, DeCastro does not get in and Gilbert gets in.
How close was Ramon Foster's play to David DeCastro's this year.
Yeah, I think Foster's done a really, really good job. I've been impressed. I think DeCastro offers some more splash plays because he's a more athletic guy, a younger guy, maybe a little bit stronger. But, you know, Foster's been steady all year long, and I've been really, really impressed with him. And I've said it before. I know you and David have talked about who's going to come back for next year, kind of a little peek into that. I want Ramon Foster back. I think it would be a mistake to let this guy go. I really want Ramon Foster back.
And I think he can get it done with very limited guaranteed money, and that's the key. Mm-hmm. I think much like his deal a couple years ago, what was it, something like 3 years to over $5 million with only $900,000 signing bonus. Now, I think it'll cost you a little bit more than that this time around, maybe as much, let's say, $1.5 million signing bonus, but maybe, you know, pretty close to the same base structure. Who else are you going to get to play left guard right now? I mean, there's a large group of fans that are BJ Finney fans, but I mean, let's face it, he was mostly used on the right side during the preseason, and really we don't know what he looks like against top notch competition. So it's not like you can sit back and rely on that, and you also can't sit back and rely on him taking a top notch guard.
Yeah, if the assumption is that Villanueva is going to be your left tackle after all this work with Ramon Foster, you'd hate to put in another player, and then maybe if it's a guy like Finney or a rookie, someone that's young. So now you have the relatively inexperienced Villanueva next to a rookie at left guard. It's just kind of a mess, a situation you don't want to be in. So for multiple reasons, and there's multiple benefits to bringing Foster back, I think he should, and I think he will come back.
I understand Ben Roethlisberger getting the nod for Pro Bowl. I was a bit surprised by it, only because of the amount of games that he missed. I mean, when Ben's been on the field, outside of really that game against the Bengals, I mean, these last handful of games, I mean, this is Ben Roethlisberger in his prime right now, right?
Oh, it is, and it's been fantastic. I'm not surprised. The AFC quarterback play is not spectacular this year. I mean, there's been so many other injuries at quarterback, too. The Steelers are not alone in that. I mean, you have Brady at quarterback in the AFC, and then there's Ben, and the rest of the list is pretty short. So it's not like the NFC where you have, I think, a lot better quarterback play with Cam Newton and Carson Palmer and guys like that.
Yeah, and a lot of people are upset that Andy Dalton, or I know Bengals fans are upset Andy Dalton didn't make it, and I know Chiefs fans are upset that Alex Smith didn't make it, but Ben has more yards and more passing touchdowns than Alex Smith, and Ben missed four games. I know it's not completely about stats, but let's face it, it's about the stats usually. Those are the three Pro Bowl representatives. AB, with that goes without saying. You can make a strong argument for Cameron Hayward that he belongs. I would not be surprised to learn if he's like a first or second alternate in this. Anybody else get the snub outside of Marcus Gilbert?
No, not the immediate.
Mike, what about Mike Mitchell?
Yeah, I was going to bring up Mitchell. I think you could have, I think if you're a Steelers fan, you watch him closely, you say yes. But again, just recognizing the name value isn't totally there. The stats aren't super gaudy if you're just a fan looking at numbers. So I can understand why he would miss out. I think William Gay played at a Pro Bowl level, but I understand he was not going to get in. But I guess those are the other ones.
You know, you really could make a strong argument for Gay, but yeah. We know, I mean, with the Patrick Petersons and the Revis and, I mean, you know, all the name recognition type guys, you're just not going to get it from, especially at cornerback, from him. But how many seasons? This is three seasons in a row or two. I mean, he was with the Cardinals a couple years ago, but I mean, these are two back-to-back great seasons that William Gay's had.
Yeah, I mean, there's another guy that just is playing, at an age where you wouldn't expect him to play, and it just keeps getting better with age, and it's just a testament to his film study, which if you watch some of the interceptions he's created, we've broken it down in the past. He just filmed – the film study pays off so much for him. He's able to jump to some of these routes and anticipate some of these throws and the run defense that he has. He's just a perfect Steelers cornerback.
I'm trying to think what we'll need to go to next. Excuse the answer machine in the background if you hear that. The playoff scenarios, obviously those have come out for week 16 here. The Steelers can obviously clinch a playoff spot in week 16 with a Jets loss And let's see, the Jets cannot clinch anything this week. So that means, if I'm reading this right, that means even if the Steelers were somehow to lose to the Ravens this week, and the Jets beat the Patriots on Sunday, the Steelers still would have an outside shot to get in. Of course, it would involve the Jets losing to the Bills and the Steelers beating the Browns in Week 17, and God knows what else has to happen for something, you know, for that, for the rest of that to come in play. So pretty cut and dry for the Steelers. Obviously, they could still win the AFC North right now, but it would take two Bengals losses for that to happen, and two Steelers wins for that to happen. I think being this how the Bengals play the, I don't know. I mean, how. The Monday night against Denver is not going to be a gimme for the Bengals, right?
No, I mean, I'm not sure who the favorite in that one is. You're more the Vegas guy than I am, but I bet you Denver.
I think Denver's favorite in that game.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, if it was me personally making some sort of line or some sort of favorite, I would have Denver as the favorite just because, you know, you got an experienced quarterback against that great Broncos defense. I know Ben tore him up, but it's a long drop from Ben Roethlisberger to A.J. McCarron, so that one will be tough. I still put the odds of the Bengals losing both pretty slim. You know, they should be able to beat Baltimore in Week 17. But that door's open, and that's what every Steelers fan should have their sights on.
Denver favored by 3.5.
Okay, well, yeah, that seems pretty solid to me. I mean, if I'm picking Denver in that game, and barring any sort of major injury that happens midweek.
And then I guess the thing, like, you know, we'll see how the flip side is, you know, if you're a Steelers fan, you could possibly root for Cincinnati to win and for Kansas City to win out. And if that were the case, then you could have a situation where if the Steelers won out, the Steelers would be the number 5 seed.
And then they play an AFC North or AFC South team, right? Is that?
Yeah, probably as it stands right now, the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but I mean, you come in with the goal of winning the AFC North every single year, and that's still what I would like to have. But it's not neither scenario is bad.
Exactly, as long as the Steelers get in. But I mean, right now, you know, odds are, I would think, and I think it looks like it very well could be, assuming if Cincinnati. If Cincinnati claims the North, and I'm trying to remember, if Cincinnati wins one more game, or if they beat – okay, here's what it is. If Cincinnati beats Denver, then they are guaranteed a first-round bye.
And if the Steelers are the 6th seed, then they would play Denver.
Denver.
Okay, so that's kind of the – if you had to pick a worst-case scenario, that would probably be it, to play at Denver in the wild card.
Wait a minute here. Let's go through this again. Okay. Because if Cincinnati beats Denver, they would have, of course, head-to-head tiebreakers. They'd have the better record. So Cincinnati would be the number 2 seed with a win over Denver, regardless of what happens in Week 17. So that at that point, a Denver loss combined with a Kansas City win, I think Kansas City could become the number 3 seed.
So who would you probably don't know, but if they who owns tiebreaker over Kansas City and Denver?
Well, let's see. They've got identical conference. Wait a minute.
If we just assume the regular season ends with identical records, then I just who's got that tiebreaker is what I'm
talking about. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. There's so much to try to deal with.
That's the old terrible podcast math gets involved in there. The way I'm looking at what the league released right here as far as standings go is Kansas City has and how far down is conference tiebreakers in as far as division goes, 8-2 conference record for Kansas City, and Denver has a 6-4 conference record. And of course, if they lost to the Bengals, that would be another conference loss. So it sounds like if Cincinnati beats Denver and Kansas City beats who do they play this week? Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Then Kansas City will probably be the number 3 seed. So if the Steelers got in at 6, it could be the Steelers traveling to Arrowhead for a rematch of that game. So that's probably. I mean, it's going to probably either be Kansas City or Denver, barring Cincinnati. Screwing the pooch, or Kansas City losing one of their final two in here. So
if you had to pick, who would you rather play at their place, Denver or Kansas City?
Wow, Kansas City.
Yeah, I probably would go there too. But Arrowhead, I mean, that's just, I mean, Haley said it, that's one of the toughest places to play.
Yeah, I mean, Kansas City to me, and I've said this for two seasons now. I mean, everybody knows how I feel about Alex Smith. I mean, their defense isn't as good as Denver's.
No, but it's good. I mean, it's a darn good defense.
Sure is, and they live off of their offense lives off of their defense being good. Mm-hmm. You know, forcing those turnovers, a ton of putos this year. I mean, Alex, how many times has Alex Smith had to throw for 300 yards?
I'm gonna look that up. I mean, it's probably been maybe three times, maybe at most. I'm not even sure. I mean, they're very similar teams, Denver and Kansas City. I think Denver's got a little bit more explosive of an offense, so I think that's why you give the edge to Denver. But man, it's close because I really like that Kansas City defense. And if they get Justin Houston back, I know Houston's dealing with an injury. The answer to the Alex Smith question looks like just once this year he's thrown for over 300 yards in a 36-21 loss to the Bengals. Back on October 4th, every other time he's been under 300 yards, so just one time.
And Justin Houston, I know he had to go visit Dr. James Andrews, but I don't know what – do you remember what's come out of that since then?
He's kind of been flighty of a day-to-day, week-to-week thing. I'm not even sure what the injury is off the top of my head. I think an MCL or something like that. So I'm not sure what his status is going to be. If I had to guess, I think he'd probably play in a playoff game. Maybe he's held out the rest of the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, if not, then you know, who they turn it to, D Ford?
Yeah, Ford's done some good things, though. I mean, Ford's coming on strong here in the second year, and I think just regardless, you got him, Tom Bali, Dontari Poe, Alan Bailey. You got some great pass rushers there. I like that secondary a lot with Eric Berry. Hussein Abdullah is a personal favorite of mine. I think an underrated guy in this league. Marcus Peters has gone crazy with the interceptions this year, had a pick six, I think, last week. It's a good team. There's no easy wins there, you know, Denver or Kansas City.
How scared are you of their receiving core, though?
Not very, and that's why I think you give the edge to Denver, because I think you're more scared of what they have than Kansas City. Macklin's done well this year. You know, I don't know if he's been worth the $11 million they've pumped into him, but I think he's done well. They just for whatever reason, they just don't get Travis Kelce involved enough in that offense. I mean, I think he's their best talent as a skill position right now, and they just don't get him involved. So that's very frustrating, I'm sure, for Kansas City fans out there, and he's like their only other real threat.
Before we get to John Eisenberg here, a couple minutes left, talking about the Steelers defense against the Broncos. You know, we've already talked about the cornerback situation. What else did you like or didn't like in that game?
I think for anyone who thought that Tua wasn't playing at the same level he was after his knee injury, I think the Denver game would shut you up a little bit. I thought he was fantastic, especially as a pass rusher. I know you saw that vine of the Shazier interception, the big club where Tua knocked, I think it was Luis Vasquez out of the way and got the initial pressure on Brock Osweiler. I thought Tua had some struggles in the run game against some of those zone blocking schemes.
He got reached one time.
A couple times, yeah. I had the one vine of it. I saw it a couple more times. Give credit to Denver, Matt Paradis. That center's done fantastic for him. So there's still some work in progress, but as a pass rusher and the two we saw early in the year, I don't think Tua really ever went away after the knee. I thought that was a little bit, you know, overhyped a little bit. But Tua did a good job. Hayward, of course, just still looking for more from that outside linebacker group. I think the biggest, one of the other issues with that Steelers defense is just the lack of a pass rush from the edge guys. You know, Moats has been quiet. Dupree really struggled in that game. He's hitting the rookie wall really hard. Jarvis got a little bit of pressure late, but it just wasn't as consistent. You're just waiting for a guy to take over a game.
Are you bringing James Harris? Are you letting James Harrison come back if James Harrison wants to come back?
I've never told James Harrison no, so I'm not going to start now. So I'm all for him coming back. That presence he has as a locker room guy, as a, you know, watch the way he work kind of guy. I think he's still got something left. I'm not sure. I mean, it sounds like he wants to come back. You know, he was so iffy to come back for this year, though, you know, with his kids and things like that, all playing big factors. I'm not sure if he's going to sit down after the season and sit there and say, I want to spend time with my kids. I've made too many times where I've chosen to play football and you know, have to spend less time with my kids. I'm not sure which way he's going to go. But if he does want to come back, sure, I'll bring him back.
Are you drafting a edge rusher in the first two rounds?
You hate to do it again. You've gone to that well so many times, but it feels like...
They just can't keep going on with what they got right now, right?
No, and that's why I sigh, because I sit there and say you spent so much, and if you want to bring Harrison back, then you have that. But, you got to get someone that can get after the quarterback. I still have high hopes for Dupree, obviously. I've not given up on him, but on that right side... Who's going to be your long-term, you know, real 10-sack kind of guy? It's not Harrison, obviously. It's not going to be Jarvis Jones and you know, Chickalo. You know, we'll see what you have in him. So you're going to reinvest, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think so as well, too. And I think it's just a bonus that you can bring James back for as cheap as he's going to cost. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you just run him until you run him into the ground until he can't go no more. Be a $1.25 million salary, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if he wants to come back, heck yeah, come on back. But I would be tempted to carry five, maybe six. I mean, let's face it, they're not going to carry six outside linebackers more than likely either.
And that's
right?
What makes it tough, because if, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about it. If we bring Harrison back, no one else is leaving. So then you have the four guys there. You got Chickalo, and if you draft somebody high, you know, it starts becoming a bit of a balancing act. So, I mean, it's almost the best thing for James to retire, because then you don't have to, you know, say no to him and you know, he doesn't come back. Is that almost the best thing that so you can?
Yeah, I think that's the best case scenario, but we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. We got plenty of time to talk about that. That's for sure. All right, Alex, you ready to get to John Eisenberg, our old buddy? Several times, great to have John back here at Christmas time. Alex and I will visit him, talk Ravens Steelers, and we'll come back after that and wrap up with some final thoughts on this show. And welcome back. And as we like to do every Wednesday on the Terrible Podcast, we have a beat writer from the opposing team that the Steelers will be playing. And this Sunday, it, of course, is the Baltimore Ravens. And you know what that means? We have our old buddy John Eisenberg back with us. John, as many of you should be well aware of by now, covers the Baltimore Ravens. He's a columnist for BaltimoreRavens.com. He's a author of eight books already, and supposedly more coming. We'll get some thoughts on that a little bit later. John, as usual, we thank you for coming back on the Terrible Podcast.
Always good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, John, let's start off with the Ravens. And first of all, I know, and we mentioned this prior to coming on, I know you were doing backflips that this game got flexed out of the late Sunday night spot because of the Ravens situation and for other obvious reasons, cutoff and deadline times. What a season this has been for the Ravens so far this year. All of the injuries, you look at the reserve injured list of this team, and it looks like it's 19-20 players. Do you remember, you've covered the team quite a while, do you remember a season quite like this for the Ravens?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I think this certainly has to go down as the most, probably the most catastrophic season that they've had. I mean, they've had some bad seasons in their history. You go back to their first years in Baltimore when Art Modell moved them from Cleveland. They only won four games and five games. Those were not good years. They had a couple of bad years under Brian Billick, one where they won just five games. This year, you know, they're sitting on four right now with two games to go, and they may well end at four. And when you consider that, they were kind of a chic Super Bowl pick before this season started. You know, Peter King picked them, and a guy at Sports Illustrated picked them. And so there was a lot of thought that they were worthy. When you consider those expectations, you know, as opposed to the early years of this franchise, you have to say that this is probably the most disappointing season they've ever had. And it's a result of a lot of factors besides just injuries.
Prior to the season, you know, and all these injuries even taking place, I thought, and I wrote about this several times, talked about it, I thought this might be a down season for the Ravens. Now, obviously, I didn't think I thought they would finish around 500. Obviously, I thought they would be in contention for the AFC North title along with the Bengals and the Steelers. Had they stayed healthy, Would this team? I mean, look at the amount, the margin of losses in several of those games, especially first half of the season. Was this team better than what I probably thought they were?
I'm not sure. You might have been right. You. I mean, it's very possible. I mean, this team with everybody healthy, you know, they lost opened the season with three losses and won the one game in Pittsburgh and then lost a few more. You know, by that point, they were starting, the losses were starting to mount up. I mean, they lost to Terrell Suggs in the first game of the season. So, you know, there were indications early that, you know, it wasn't going to be quite what everybody had hoped. I mean, they've never really committed. The offensive line hasn't blocked quite as well. They haven't run the ball as well as they did a year ago. The pass defense has been leaky, and they have not had many injuries in the pass defense. You know, there are indications that they were not going to be that great of a team, regardless of these injuries, you know. That would be the main factor, especially recently. I mean, the wheels have really come off here. I mean, they lost Joe Flacco. I mean, when you have a team that's already struggling with some manpower on offense in particular, and you lose your quarterback and playmaker, they don't have anywhere near what the Steelers have in those regards. You're just out of luck. There's just not much going on.
John, speaking of quarterbacks and injuries, I know Mike Tomlin made a pass at the possibility of preparing for Ryan Mallett. I've heard some reports that he might start these last 2 weeks. What's going on in the quarterback situation? Is it going to be Clausen or Schaub or Mallett? What's kind of the feeling over there?
Honestly, they're not tipping their hand. We don't know. It could be any of them. It could be any of the three. You know, Clausen has played the last two games, and results notwithstanding, he's actually played pretty well. They've moved the chains, thrown for a lot of passing yards. I mean, you know, his number one receiver is Kamar Aiken, who is probably a number four receiver on a good receiving core. But, you know, Aiken is actually playing some good football, and you know, they've moved the chains with Clausen. So, Schaub continued his history of throwing pick sixes when he had his chance before he got beat up. So it's hard to believe that they're going to go in that direction. And Mallett just got here. So are they just going to throw him in against Pittsburgh? I have no idea. They do want to look at him. The goal of all of it is they're trying to figure out who Flacco's backup is going to be in 2016. It was Schaub this year. Schaub, he did okay. But, you know, I think they want to get a little younger, more athletic at the backup position, especially now that their quarterback's coming off major knee surgery. So, you know, I expect it to be Clausen or Mallett. And I have to believe Clausen's going to start the game. But, you know, they have nothing to play for. So, you know, anything is possible.
Do you have any sort of preference? Anyone would you like to see Mallett, just like you said, to help maybe identify a backup for next year?
Yeah, but I don't think that that's fine if they want to put him in here. I mean, literally, he's been here for a little over a week.
Right.
So I don't think you can really, even if he goes out and lays an egg, I don't think you can really blame him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to be here through the OTAs. He's going to be here through training camp. Mm-hmm. You know, they signed him for 2016, so they're going to get a good look at him in practices and in preparation. And, you know, they throw him into a game and something happens, yeah, I mean, that'd be great to see him, but it's really hard to – it's not really fair, I don't think, to measure him, you know, considering that he just got here. So it would be interesting to see him, and I – you know, he may get in there, but, you know, it's they're not – you know, it's kind of sad, isn't it, when that's the big quarterback debate. Is it going to be Jimmy Clausen or Ryan Mallett?
Some more shakeups on that offensive line, I think, due to injuries as well, too. Now you have Urschel, you know, Penn State boy that even Alex wrote about him quite a bit, a smart kid over center now. How's he playing there, and what has led to Osamele moving out to left tackle? I thought Hurst was doing an okay job outside of letting Flacco get hit, you know, suffering that injury there, you know, several weeks ago. And of course, Jensen at left guard, I don't know too much about him. Can you give us a quick overview of the state of that offensive line right now? We know about Yanda, by the way.
Yeah, Yanda just made the Pro Bowl again. Yanda's a great player. You know, he's probably the best player on the team, and he's great. He's fun to watch. But, yeah, everything else is in flux. Yes, injuries have played a role, and they've moved Assembly out to left tackle because they've seen enough of Wagner. They've seen enough of Hurst. I'm sorry, Hurst. They just felt he's an undrafted free agent a year ago, and he's given a great effort. He's a little overmatched out there against some of these top rush ends. So they've moved Assembly out there, who's probably better as a guard, but did play tackle in college at Iowa State. And, you know, is a real nice player that's going to have a nice he's going to have a nice payday in free agency in this coming off season. Somebody's going to want him. He's never made the Pro Bowl, but he's a real nice offensive lineman and could have a Pro Bowl in his future. And they put him in tackle, and because they're disappointed in Eugene Monroe, who they gave some money to before the 2014 season, and he's been injured a lot, constantly injured. When he's on the field, he's played okay, not outstanding, okay, I would say, but constantly injured. And so they're very disappointed in sort of his ability to stay on the field. So they're looking elsewhere, I think, going forward. And Assembly is one of their options. I mean, they gave Yonda a bunch of money during the season, an extension, and it's hard to imagine they would give it to another guard. You can't just pay your guards a ton of money in the salary cap era, but maybe it's a left tackle. They're thinking about it. Is he the guy that they could just give that left tackle job to going forward? In terms of the center, Urschel is probably going to be a starting lineman on this team, whether it's center or guard next year. He's playing center because Jeremy Zuda, the center, got injured after the year. And so Urschel's done okay. He's hung in there and, real smart guy, as you said, and he knows he can call the plays. I mean, he's good barking those signals up front. And he's got a future with this team one way or another. And, he's a fun guy to be around, interesting guy. People are rooting for him.
I saw Crockett Gilmore, unfortunately, got placed on IR, I think, earlier this week here. That leaves him with Max Williams, and I'm not sure really who else. In fact, I think they had Hurst even playing some blocking tight end against the Kansas City Chiefs. Should we expect a lot of heavy kind of two tight end packages from the Ravens with Hurst seeing some playing time as an extra blocker?
Yes, absolutely. Since Gilmore went out the last couple games, that's what they've been doing. Nick Boyle was another one of the rookies that was playing pretty well at tight end. He's on a PED suspension for four games. And so, he's out. Gilmore, I mean, they like all their young tight ends, and Gilmore has had a real nice season, but, again, he plays very physically and has gotten beat up. And, so he's done there. Max Williams, their second round pick this year, and I'd say he's had a quiet rookie season. He has not had any breakout games, but he has great hands, and they're going to use him more and more down the line. What's interesting though, it shows you how these injuries can handicap your offense. I mean, they love that two tight end set, and they love to throw out of that two tight end set, and they were throwing a lot to their tight ends earlier in the year, but you just can't do it now. You just can't do it when James Hurst is your second tight end. So those plays are out of the playbook.
Sticking with the skill positions, John, Buck Allen's been the guy at running back since Forsett went down. I know he had some fumbling issues last week. Harbaugh said they weren't going to banish him. Just what have you seen from him, in total this year from Buck Allen? And is he a guy that you would be comfortable and like to see as Forsett's backup in the future?
Yeah, I think so, as Forsett's backup. He'll be pretty good. He's been the feature back. He's had some ups and downs, had a real nice game against the Dolphins a few weeks ago. He caught 12 passes coming out of the backfield. He broke a 50-yard touchdown run down the right-hand side. And, you can't ask for a whole lot more. He was a real playmaker. Since then, though, I mean, Seattle, there was no room to run against the Seahawks a couple weeks ago. And he fumbled in that game as well. And then when he fumbled again last week early in the game, Harbaugh just took him out. Some people have criticized Harbaugh for doing that, just taking the kid out and not letting him back in. I thought it was fine. The turnovers have just undermined this Ravens season. Their ratio is minus 15 for the year. And so, I think I don't blame the coach for making an example of someone and saying, listen, we just can't do this, especially 2 weeks in a row. So that move was made. I expect Buck Allen to be back on the field against Pittsburgh this week. And the other guy is Terrence West, who, has actually looked pretty good. He's bounced around a little, was a pretty high draft pick with Cleveland a couple of years ago, and he's bounced around a little bit. He's a Baltimore native. It's a hometown story. And he's very excited to be here. And in limited chances, he's averaged well over 4 yards a carry. This is a guy that gained almost 700 yards for the Browns as a rookie. So he's a viable candidate as well. And between those two, though, the running game has actually done okay, you know, without Forsett. They missed Forsett, but these two young guys aren't bad.
Yeah, I know West, you know, rewrote the record books at Townsend. But switching to receiver now, if there's any sort of, I guess, bright spot, you know, trying to look for a couple of those, at least in the return game, Kalen Clay, who I think you guys got from Tampa Bay at some point or something like that,
yeah,
he had a big
right.
82-yard punt return. Is he kind of being that maybe kind of splash play contributor on special teams?
Yeah, I mean, he's been good. I mean, they put him out there. You know, he broke the one against the Browns on Monday Night Football. And he has not fumbled, which cost some people their jobs here. Jeremy Ross earlier in the year, you know, dropped a couple and was gone. So, I mean, they just have really been mistake prone in the return game. Clay's been good. So as long as he catches that way, they've had him running back a couple of kickoffs as well. He's quick, explosive, really fast. And, yeah, so I think you know, I mean, I don't know whether he'll be the guy going forward. It's hard to have a kick return specialist on your roster now. There's so few kick returns. But he's been pretty good.
A lot of the usual suspects still around. I know they lost Suggs and all, but defensively, a lot of familiar names, of course, in Doomerville and Mosley and everybody. Me and Alex and I are big fans of Brandon Williams in the middle. That dude can clog the middle like nobody else. But how has Za'Darius Smith played so far this season? You know, really, he's going to be the guy that you know one would think going to be the heir apparent to Suggs over there. And we'll talk a little bit later, or you maybe you can go ahead and give your thoughts now if you think Suggs is going to even be back next year.
Well, that's a big question here. They got all these older players that are coming off Achilles and injuries, and you know Steve Smith being another one. And there's a lot of questions. I mean, Suggs is under contract for next year, and they think he'll be better. I mean, if it's up to him, he'll be back. Whether the Ravens want to keep him or you know move on in another direction and take on some dead money there remains to be seen. You know, they missed Suggs without it. You know, he's no longer the pass rusher that he was years ago, but still pretty good and real good at setting the edge against the run, and they have missed that this year. So Za'Darius Smith is a rookie. He's run around, and you haven't heard his name in a lot of games, but as the year goes on, I mean, he did have two sacks in that game in Pittsburgh, and then he had two again this past week. He's got four for the season. So he's a rookie that's played a lot of snaps and is starting to set the edge better and is going to end up with, you know, maybe five sacks if he gets another one. That's a pretty good rookie year. So, you know, I think that's a puzzle piece moving forward. You know, and that's a fourth-round pick. They're happy with that. You know, I mean, there's been the interior where they've been vulnerable this year is tight ends, running backs. Running backs coming out of the backfield, you know, the linebacking core, you know, Mosley, Darryl Smith, they're real solid. They make a lot of tackles, but they've been caught in pass coverage a lot this year. I expect the Steelers to really work on that, try to take advantage of that. But, you know, they're still pretty solid against the run, not quite as tight as usual. They could use, you were right about Brandon Williams, they could use another one or two of him as a phenomenal player. Still a little young and, you know, didn't make the Pro Bowl this year, but I think that's a future Pro Bowler there. He is a run stuffer and has done yeoman's work in the middle.
Is Jimmy Smith going to make this game after leaving that one last week with, I believe it was a thigh injury?
Looks like a yes. I think Jimmy Smith will make it. You know, they're pretty much moved Za'Darius Webb to the nickel. You know, the slot cornerback, he's not on the edge of that secondary anymore, and he's also playing some safety. So Jimmy will be there, and then, I mean, the other one, a lot of cast of thousands over there, Sharice Wright, Jamal Roll, take your pick. So there'll be some people over there, and I can guarantee you, you know, Ben and his crew are licking their chops.
I think it's my last question for you, John. Just obviously the season's been a bust for Baltimore with all the injuries and everything, but if you could maybe stack one or two positions to look at for this team to address in either free agency or the draft, what would be at the top of your list?
Well, they're going to have a top five draft pick. They might have the highest draft pick in the history of this franchise.
Wow.
Number three pick, something like that. And it's imperative, obviously, that they hit with it. And if I had my druthers, I would like a big, filthy, nasty pass rusher, a game changer, a Khalil Mack type player. You know, I think that's what they need. They need playmakers. They need playmakers on both sides of the ball. But defensively, somebody, you know, the next Suggs. They need another Suggs. And player like that has such an impact on a game. And, you know, if that player is not there, I would say a defensive back, a cornerback that you would put opposite Smith. You know, Smith has been a bit of a disappointment this year, but he's still a big physical player, and they're fine with him going forward. You know, you get another cornerback over there, the best guy in the draft, you know, a shutdown guy, then you're looking at a tightened up secondary a little bit, because that's really worth the downfall. If you take away the injuries, it's been the performance of the defense has not been up to standard at all here. And so I think that's where that high draft pick will definitely be invested. And, you know, rush end or cornerback would be my picks.
I'm going to point to the fence right now and say Ozzie Newsome trades that pick for more picks, because he needs some buy. It smells like something Ozzie would do if he had the right buyer for it. John, I know what your answer is going to be here, but any chance the Ravens, you know, look, I mean, this is their Super Bowl, so to speak, in Week 16. Nothing better than to beat the Steelers. Any chance they win? And if they don't, throw us out a final score here.
I'd say chances are real. I've learned these games are weird. You never know what's going to happen. But I don't think the Ravens have it in them to beat the Steelers. And I would say something along the lines of 31-16, something like that.
Tell us, update our listeners about your books and your Twitter handle says more coming. So is there more coming? What's in the works?
Yeah, there are. It's a slow boil with these books. It takes a while. I'm finishing up a baseball book on the history of the Iron Man record in baseball that Cal Ripken Jr., of course, owned. Sort of going back to the beginning of that record's history, Lou Gehrig, and before that, even, and where it came from. You know, back in the day, I wrote a lot of baseball. I still like to write baseball, and I'm writing about the history of endurance in baseball. And that one will be out. I'm not sure when it'll be out. I'm just trying to finish it now. And actually, there's some Pittsburgh reference to. I've also under contract to write a book of football history. It's really a birth story of the National Football League, the first years, the generation of guys who got that league. Through the years when nobody cared about professional football, I'm talking about the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the cast of characters who did it. And, of course, one of them is Art Rooney Sr. And I have actually already interviewed several members of the family, you know, Dan Rooney and Art Rooney Jr., and, you know, about their dad. And, of course, plenty's been written about him. But I'm sort of writing in the context of his place in history with these other guys that he was along with, Burt Bell and George House and these other guys, and how they did it as a group. And I'm enjoying that a lot. The Rooneys have been great, and I'm enjoying dealing with that and telling that story. And so that one, that'll be out sometime in 2017, I would say.
All right, and folks, to keep on top of that, first you should be following John Eisenberg on Twitter at BMoreEisenberg. You can keep track of his books at johneisenberg.com, and you can search for his books on Amazon.com as well too. John provided a link in his Twitter bio for easy access there. John, you know you're one of our favorites on this show. You do phenomenal work, and I speak for Alex and David. Todd, we hope you have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we look forward to talking to you during the offseason, talk a little bit more about the Ravens as well. We appreciate you coming on the show once again.
My pleasure. I always enjoy coming on.
All right. Good friend, John Eisenberg. Alex, I think that's the first time you got talk to him. Always a joy to have John Eisenberg on the show.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And I was telling you before we restarted this, Dave, is that his football book, his history book he's got coming out in 2017, that one really interests me because I'm a big, you know, football history buff. I love that stuff. So I sincerely cannot wait for that book to come out.
And listeners, please make sure you reach, if you're on Twitter and you're active on Twitter, reach out to John Eisenberg at BMoreEisenberg and let him know you appreciate him coming on the show. You know, it's that kind of feedback that these beat writers get from our listeners that makes sure that we can always count on them coming on these shows, you know, every year, because nothing better, and it's kind of one of the staples that David and I have had on this podcast throughout its existence, is having beat writers on Wednesday to discuss the upcoming opponent and have their insights, you know, for the upcoming game. So once again, we appreciate John Eisenberg coming on. Boy, that's a tough spot to be in, right? To have to talk about a team that, you know, four wins, you know, heading into week 16 of the season.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you're leading off conversations about Ryan Mallett versus Jimmy Clausen, and like John said, it's I'm sure it's tough to get excited about some of that stuff. But like he said, it is always, you know, Steelers, Ravens, those games are always funny. Baltimore won the first one. Obviously, they're a much different-looking team now with all the injuries, but you can never come in and assume anything in an AFC North game, especially in a Steelers-Ravens matchup. And, you know, like any team in the NFL, even one as beat up as the Ravens are, there's always some weapons on there. Like Kalen Clay kid that we mentioned, Tomlin talked about him in the press conference. He's an explosive guy. Kamar Aiken has done well. Being the number one receiver, Buck Allen has done some nice things, so you can never assume.
I'm gonna save you from doing a prediction here because A, I know you don't like doing them, and B, I know you haven't made it all the way through the previewing of the Ravens tape here. But give the listeners a heads up what you got coming and what other guys have coming on the site the rest of the week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it'll be pretty safe. I'm gonna take the Steelers here. I think in a game like this, I can probably stick my neck out a little bit this week and next week. But yeah, check out the scouting reports that'll still come on Friday. Zach Grazinger and myself, and I'll do those. I have an article up today on Cam Hayward talking about special teams and field goals. It combines my favorite things, Danny Smith, Cam Hayward, and field goals. So there's kind of an underrated thing that Hayward does, taking pride in that kind of stuff. Josh Carney's doing a great job with you know, bowl previews with an eye on the NFL draft. That goes up every single day. I've got two bowl games today, so we have an article up on that from him. Zach also has some great O-line breakdowns from the Broncos game. He's our offensive line, defensive line guru, a guy that knows that stuff really, really well. So definitely check all that stuff out today and throughout the rest of the week.
Yeah, we'll be writing a little bit about what Todd Haley, Keith Butler, and Danny Smith have to say. We assume that'll be a Thursday session there with the media as well with what they do on Steelers Nation Radio earlier in the day as well, too. So look for recaps of and many stories surrounding what they have to say there. David should be back on Friday. There should be a Christmas show. I'm not going to guarantee it, though. Stranger things have happened. If there's not, we'd like to wish all of our listeners a very Merry Christmas and a safe holiday here as well, too. And while we're on it here, just before we wrap this thing up, several donations have come in. We'd like to give these shout-outs. Aaron Graffius, appreciate the donation. Kevin Burinescu, I know I'm butchering that. Our buddy Brian Chiramonte, I know Brian's been a long-time follower on Twitter, a long-time donator as well, too, and I know I butchered his name for like the 10th time there. Cynthia Miller, why don't you guys send pronunciation guides with this for my redneck self? H. Tyson sent in another donation. I know that's not his first. Junior Anderson, Pierre Miller, Carl McAllister, and some of these I think I'm starting to duplicate again. Thanks, everyone, for donating to the podcast. It's what makes it possible. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow Alex Cazora on Twitter at Alex_Cazora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Alex, thanks a lot for sitting in for David today. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.